Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Today's show harkens back to its roots. We are being purists today. There is no video version of this show today. And I got to tell you, I'm digging it because, you know, I haven't shaved in a few days. Elise has been out of town and I was like, oh, I'm not shaving today. I'm going to go on the camera and I got all this gray whisker now. And, I don't know. It makes me look old. I really don't like it. You know, there's a niche group of people out there. It's like a secret club. And their secret is that they have invested in and believe in pulsed electromagnetic field devices. We have a secret handshake. You can't see us amongst others in the population. But if you get the acronym PEMF out loud enough, all of a sudden people come over and go, yeah, I use one. What do you use yours for? And that really is where the technology has been stuck because it's an amazing technology. But the problem is that people just don't know what to believe when this whole PEMF discussion arises. And you can't be a good consumer if you don't understand it because you can't believe it. And so you're stuck and you go, gee, you know, like that Persian rug. You just don't want to buy it. You just don't want to get caught in that scandal. Well, we have a guest today that I think is going to actually push a lot of fact out about PEMF, and that is Dr. Robert Dennis. How you doing, Dr. Dennis?
I'm doing great. Doing great, thanks.
So back when I first discovered PEMF, a lot of research was being done by, guess who? NASA. And as it turns out, you were one of those people that was working with NASA on PEMF technologies. Can you talk about your background first, please?
Yeah, sure. So I basically I finished my PhD at Michigan in biomedical engineering in 1996, and I started a little company off, you know, to make biomedical instruments off in a cornfield in Dexter, Michigan. You know, it was basically in a garage. So that's just, you know, kind of mad science and my way through it. And I actually got a call from somebody, and it was a guy at NASA who was down at Johnson Space Center down in Houston. And he said, you know, hey, I heard you can build devices that are like basically PEMF. They called it time-varying electromagnetic fields, TVEMF, before the, you know, term PEMF was real popular. And I said, well, you know, I'll tell you, I can't say the exact word I said to him, but I said, you know, because I know this is family friendly, but I said, you know, this is nonsense, right? Don't waste your time on this, right? So I was real skeptic, right? And, you know, of course, I was full of myself because I already knew everything, right? I just had a PhD.
Yeah, so right, exactly.
I must have been pretty smart, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, so that's true. So
the cup was full, brother. I just, like, I knew everything, right? So they're like, you know, no, we're real interested in this, and maybe you can build something and go on a space shuttle and everything. And I'm like, well, you know, I'll go down there and I'll teach these guys what's real, you know. So I'm thinking all, you know, I'm all smart and everything. I went down there and I talked to them, and they said, look, you know, we just want to try some kind of PEMF on growing cells in space. And I thought, you know, that's harmless enough. They're going to pay me. So, you know, I said, but I'm not going to do a half a job. I'm going to figure this out for them. If it can be done, I'm going to try to figure it out, even though I'm a real disbeliever, right?
Right.
So then, you know, what I did was I went through the entire scientific literature on this. I even had some papers translated from Russian because during the Cold War, beyond the Iron Curtain, they actually did a lot of work on PEMF. So there was about a total of 660 papers on PEMF by that date, and they were PEMF and related to PEMF, some other electrical stimulation stuff. And it was a really bad quality literature. I mean, the results were good, but if you're a scientist, you're looking at it, boy, they didn't report the right things. I mean, so I thought, you know, I told those guys again, I said, you guys are really getting yourselves into some low quality stuff here. But they wanted to do it. So long story short, I designed a very careful experiment, and I carefully designed the instrument. So we ran the experiment at Johnson Space Center, and lo and behold, we saw these human neuronal cells in culture, changed their gene expression, their growth rate, their metabolism, and production of, you know, extracellular proteins. It changed a lot of things.
Okay, so wait a minute. I have a question now, because I don't have a good memory anymore, so I have to ask them like an ADD child in the middle of a conversation. You just can't see me raising my hand. That's the only problem.
Okay, but,
So this was here on Earth already. And they were my point is, were you in a shielded room that evacuated any residual EMF?
This is all a huge myth that's grown up around it. Like there's some really bad people who have glommed onto this whole NASA thing that I did, and they published a whole bunch of stuff about Schumann resonances and how the shuttlecraft went around the pole, the North Pole, and, you know, the magnetic fields changed and everything like that. And this is largely promulgated by a guy who was busy scamming NASA at the time.
Oh.
And I don't know if I want to say his name, but I can tell you this. He's in prison for life now for murdering a couple people up in Chicago.
No wonder why I can't get customer service to take this PMF unit back over there.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is that he was one of the original scammers, okay? And you can find him, and there's books written about him.
If there's books written about him, mention his name. This guy is out in the public domain already.
Okay, he's out in the public domain. His name is Donnie Rudd, and there's a book written about him by his stepdaughters called Living with the Devil.
Ooh!
And, I mean, he's actually a very charming person. I talk to him all the time, you know, prison phone and everything now, but he was one of the first people who hired me to take the NASA work that we did that was really working and try to turn it into a product.
But he's
one of the first people who promulgated this notion that NASA did a huge amount of research on this, and they did not. They actually did a little work with me, a little bit with some other people, and they kind of dropped it. And you know, so NASA didn't do a huge amount of PMF work, but they did some of the important initial work in the 1990s, and that's the real truth. But it was never, the stuff that I did was never taken up in space. It was all done on the ground, as you were asking.
Yeah, but still, this is interesting. This is interesting because the theory is that the reason we need electromagnetic fields in space is because in zero gravity, where there is none of these electromagnetic fields, because we're not on the land of a planet.
Mm-hmm.
So we need those to keep a bone mineral in place and muscle degradation from occurring. And so naturally, if you go up in space and you use these, yes, but I don't understand how without, you already have incident pulses on that, those cells in that environment. And now you're adding this to it.
Well, let me address that. I think a lot of what you've heard about needing these electromagnetic fields in space to maintain bone density and everything, there is a bone density problem. That's true. But, I mean, I've done a lot of research with people and, you know, stuff for NASA and for Department of Defense. I can tell you these are real things. But the role of PEMF in preventing that and the fact that that was established and now that's used by NASA and everything, my opinion, that is 100% marketing fraud.
Really?
There's a bunch of people telling you stuff that's just not true, trying to get you to think, oh, okay, it's worth it for me to spend $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 on this high tech, you know, NASA stuff, right? I mean, that doesn't seem to be the case. And this whole thing about, you know, the space shuttle and watching cells respond differently when we flew across the, you know, the North Pole or regions and all that stuff, that's all just lies. Okay.
Well, but okay, granted, that's all lies. I get it. And I'm not,
okay.
But I guess the question then becomes to me is if in fact, I mean, because right now the medical equipment manufacturers are profiting from PEMF for knitting bones, you know, and apparently it works unless they're, you know, everybody out there using this technology for this purpose is lying.
No. Let me actually make something clear, okay?
Okay.
There are about 1,000 papers now specifically on PEMF, specifically scientifically, you know, peer-reviewed papers that show it seems to work and seems to be beneficial. I think the jury's in on that. I don't think there's any doubt that PEMF is helpful, and I don't think that part of it is a scam.
Okay.
The scam is when people misrepresent what we know about it and misrepresent their contribution to it. So what you've got is a bunch of marketers who say, you know, this comes straight from NASA. I know it doesn't come straight from NASA. You know how? I can prove it. I actually get royalty checks for the NASA research. I can show you.
Right.
It's documented, and I haven't been paid by a single commercial PEMF manufacturer for therapeutic PEMF. The only thing I've ever gotten paid for is industrial applications of it for, you know, making biomolecules and stuff, but never from a company that makes a PEMF machine for use on people. Because none of them have paid for this. None of them had anything to do with what was going on at NASA. You know, and the fact is there's a huge amount of misinformation about this. And I was talking to the guy who was director of the medical research going on at Johnson Space Center when I was there. I didn't know him at the time, but he was he was telling me that he thinks I'm the only person who's really going around saying the truth about this stuff, because, you know, he's been going to meetings for 20 years and hearing all kinds of, you know, and he was medical director at that facility. He was hearing all kinds of myths and you know, fantasy, you know, fairy tales about what they were doing there. It's just not true. You know, there was some good legitimate work. PEMF does seem to have legitimate effects. And the fact is, nobody knows why.
That's just okay, but so I want to inject why. Okay, now you have to understand, you have a bigger, stronger brain than I do. So I'm allowed to put my foot in my mouth if I want to. And plus, I don't have any letters after my name, so nobody could take anything from me.
I make mistakes professionally. Okay, that's how I put food on the table. If I'm not saying something wrong, I'm not doing my job.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Right. So there is really this symbiotic relationship between the ionosphere and the core of the Earth, that when lightning strikes, it creates this, what it bounces into the core and comes back out as an electromagnetic field. It's been measured. It's been quantified. It's real. It varies by geolocation. It could be 14.7 one place, 7.3 someplace else. But it is there. And I have been a believer of, and you're gonna break my heart if you tell me that I'm wrong, okay? So just understand the gravity of this, okay? But I've been a believer that just the way we evolved under the direct influences of sun and the role that played in the genetic evolution of our being and air and mitochondria, I have believed that these magnetic fields have influenced our evolutionary journey, and to a good degree. I mean, like, they actually are part of our trajectory. Am I wrong?
Well, you know, I think the best answer for that question is certainly, I don't know. And I don't think that scientifically that there is an answer to that. I think it's a big maybe. And I'll tell you why. I mean, a lot of the importance of sunlight is just now coming out. And we've been studying sunlight on human, you know, development and growth for decades. And we're just still figuring out, oh, yeah, this is important and that's important. You know, just like the effects of different colors of light on, you know, sleep cycles and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that the effect of magnetic fields on humans is actually not well studied.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got this stigma. So I think the right answer is, you know, you could be right. Now let me sort of put my nerdy hat on, okay? Like, you can detect sunlight pretty easily, right? You step outside and you look up, you know, unless you grew up in Michigan like I did, where you just look around for the sun all day and you just can't find it. But in the rest of the world...
Yeah, God played a joke on Michigan. It was a joke. Exactly. It was supposed to be over by now. We all got it, you know?
Right. Getting sunlight and detecting it and reacting to it physiologically is pretty clear. It's pretty clear, and the mechanisms are pretty clear, right? But resonance, Schumann resonance, you actually have to build a pretty big facility to detect it. It's something you can't really directly sense, and you can't even get it with sort of simple, small bench test equipment. It kind of requires a pretty large, like a larger facility. So whether or not your body can even detect it, you know, it's kind of up for grabs, but the body's pretty good at, you know, detecting pretty small signals.
But we know that it influences on a cellular level. There's so many good studies that show that these pulses of electromagnetic fields.
Ah, that's separate. Okay. So I think that it's that's separate from Schumann resonances, right? There may or may not be an actual physiologic effect of Schumann resonances, and that's unknown. But it's pretty well established that PEMF has very positive biological effects. Yes, mm-hmm. you're correct.
And so
but we don't know why.
So the jury is still out. But like many other things, as we just said about sun and all these other things, but there's early adopters. You know, back in the day, everybody went to California when TB was rampant in the United States because for some reason, when you stayed in the sun, you fared better. And they had all of these mm-hmm. facilities out there that literally pushed people outside on their gurneys in the daytime and put them in the sun and put them back in their rooms. And they were tuberculosis.
Yep.
I mean, so sun, we know it's magic. I really believe strongly. And I'll tell you something else. I've talked about these two issues on the air in the past, and that is the fact that I have been suffering from iron overload, mm-hmm. and I have been experimenting with a PEMF device, or devices, actually, for the mm-hmm. past 15 years. And I could see now, as I started to understand the impact of my iron overload and over the period of time that symptoms started to show up, I can tell you without a doubt that that's when I started to having to turn my PEMF unit down because it was actually, it felt like it agitated me. I could feel it. Mm-hmm. I could feel like my tissue undulating. And I shared that with you and said, and we both agreed, like, yeah, if you got a lot of iron in you, you're basically a better antenna, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you and I were talking about this, you know, I believe we were talking about like transverse quarter wave, you know, antinodes and that kind of stuff, you know, because you're kind of an RF guy and you know about this stuff. So, yeah, there are strange effects. There are some that you can figure out mathematically. You know, you get an antenna a certain length and it's going to be really receptive to certain wavelengths, right? Well, this is a really great subject. And I've been thinking about it since you and I talked about it a couple days ago. And it's not just iron, right? It's any conductor. So when you start getting up in the high frequency range, which, you know, when you look at square pulses, you actually do get higher and higher frequency harmonics. But also when you're in the microwave range, right, you're talking about millimeters in wavelength when you get into the higher frequencies. And that could start picking up things like loops in capillary loops and, you know, small arterial loops. And so, like, your body just... because blood's a conductor.
Holy crap. Yeah, your little blood vessels are like tiny little antenna.
There you go. And I've never heard anybody talk about this, but it crosses my mind. It ought to be studied. Certain certain wavelengths are going to correspond to certain biological dimensions.
Yes.
And one of them is that a cell is like 10 to 15, you know, microns in diameter, right? So we're talking about, you know, above, slightly above, you know, microwave frequencies.
And with routers and cordless phones all in the 3, 4, 7 gigahertz range?
They're right in that range, right? So you've got like in my tiny little pea brain, okay, I'm seeing, I do the quick back of the envelope calculation, and you're talking about some very effective antennas being made out of conductive material. Doesn't have to be ferromagnetic, just any conductor, right? I mean, you can make an antenna out of copper. Doesn't have
well
to be
in
iron,
fact
right?
In fact, the inherent characteristics of the conductor could attract specific wavelengths. So because look, don't they use that to kill cancer now? Don't they inject people with something that is, and then when they fire the ionizing radiation at it, it zeroes in and burns those things up.
There you go. And in fact, I worked on that research for a company about 10 or 11 years ago where we were getting small pieces of nano iron, right? So it's just a few thousands of molecules of iron. To actually be in, you know, chunks of it to be engulfed by blood platelets, which are about 2 microns across, and then they would engulf these pieces of iron particle, nanoparticles, and then they would use the blood platelets right from that person. Once they've gotten them to ingest the iron, use them to target their very own tumors. And then once they've got the tumor targeted with a lot of these platelets, then you just basically hit them with something like approximately, you know, microwave wavelength, and it heats up the tumor and kills it. So, yeah, you know, I mean, there's technologies, they're very similar to that. And so I think that you're right. I think, you know, remember when we were kids, I mean, it was, you know, you'd hear about people picking up AM radio on, you know, their braces, right?
Oh, I built one of those crystal radios when I was a kid.
Exactly.
It had an alligator clip, and you clipped it to any metal grounded item in your house, and you pick up an AM radio station.
Right, exactly. And it was like the lead crystal. So I would use like a fishing sinker, you know, and, yeah. And like a safety pin. And yeah, I remember I did the same thing, right? And so, you know, you're starting to understand that when you do that, that like your braces versus common objects around the house, they can be the right geometry to pick up, you know, radio frequencies. And when you're starting to talk about higher and higher frequencies, you're starting to talk about shorter and shorter wavelengths. And those start to correspond with anatomical dimensions around cells and tissues. And that's what I think is going on with these high-frequency radio, you know, RFI, you know, noise and RF smog kind of stuff.
I want to talk – so that's what I want to talk – I want to take a break. I want to move into the RF soup that we live in today. And where did that figure? I want also for my brain. I want you to explain why RF is different than EMF. Because I guess let's take a break. Let's take a break.
Yep.
We're talking with Dr. Robert Dennis. This is getting fascinating. I don't know about you, but I'm sitting back and listening and really loving this. And I hope you are too. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000, or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's REDCON, the number 1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Wanting to try CBD but not sure what to trust? Check out H-Hemp. H, like healthy, happy, honest. H-Hemp CBD system makes it simple with one CBD tincture available in 3 great tasting flavors, a super powerful breath spray that GQ magazine named a top CBD product, and a topical CBD balm that is simply the bomb. Relax and feel better naturally with the H-Hemp CBD system, available at hhemp.com. Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Robert Dennis, about pulse electromagnetic fields. If you want to communicate with him, his website is micro-pulse.com. You can check him out there. He's got lots of great information. He even has some products that he didn't want me to plug, but, you know, it's my show. I get to do what I want. Anyway, but, yeah, check it out. I mean, this is really fascinating stuff. And if you are not an early adopter like me, maybe it's time for you to start looking at this, because there's a lot of N equals many evidence out there, and it's not placebo, and there is growing bodies of science And I predict that I will be vindicated someday. They'll say, you remember that idiot that had that podcast? You know, he said that PMF influenced our genetic outcomes. And I have another theory I'm going to throw out there. And I don't want you to weigh in on it because you don't want to step onto the loony side of the show with me. But I predict years from now, they'll realize that the RF soup that we live in is changing our gut microbes. In turn, our gut microbes are causing problems that are leading to complete inflammation from the esophagus down to the anus. And this is why even skinny 86-pound people have sleep apnea today. Because the narrowing of the plumbing coming north from the gut is leading to collapse at night when people sleep. You know, I'm telling you, Doc, I predict this is gonna come to fruition because I've wrestled with this mass population obstructive sleep apnea thing for the past 5 years now. It's like, what is everybody doing the same? And, you know, some people work out, some people are vegans, some, you know, it's like, no. But then I just realized we all live in this RF soup. And we already are starting to see research coming out that's showing the changes in microbial diversity in the gut after being exposed to just one cell phone call. The time, you know.
You know, I think there's something to that, in my opinion. I'm happy to step over to the loony bin side because, you know, maybe that's where I belong and say, you know, when I read the science on this, it's pretty clear. I mean, sometimes with PEMF, they do not see an effect on biological growth, and sometimes they do. And interestingly, if you use low-frequency, low-power PEMF, it doesn't seem to have as many deleterious effects on, you know, pathogens as the higher frequency stuff. So I think if you get a sort of a, you know, dirty, cheap PEMF system, you can run into the same problems you run into with just, you know, dirty, cheap radio frequency interference.
You have a lot of spurious, frequencies, yes, being produced. And so yep. Interestingly enough, you said some of them do and some of them don't respond, you know, to these influences, but that could have a lot to do with the types of conductors that hyperpopulate their cells over this conductor. Yep. And that's why we can't point that finger and go, oh, every time this happens, that happens. So now you're going to have to start doing punch biopsies to see what potential conductors are in tissue and then looking at the outcomes, I predict, from electromagnetic fields. Another thing I wanted to say is, am I stupid if I'm using some critical thinking and saying, of course, these existing Schumann waves are very, 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 very low power. They're so low power that they don't interfere with a compass. Because think about that. If they were high enough power, like some of these PEMF devices where you could turn them on and you actually, you know, the stuff on the roof is rattling. You know, if they were that powerful, they'd interfere with a basic compass. We wouldn't know where north was.
They would interfere with the compass. They would interfere with all kinds of other things. You know, we might even be able to hear some of the higher frequency ones. But, you know, animals have adapted to detect very low-level electronic and electromagnetic signals. For example, it is well known now that sea turtles and birds and some mammals navigate by the Earth's magnetic field. And there are some, you know, theories about how that's actually a quantum effect. And that's pretty well established now scientifically. That's not just, you know, science fiction. So there's some pretty amazing things that biology does when it interacts with its environment. I mean, there are insects like the dung beetle that navigate by the polarity of, you know, the Milky Way. So, you know, it actually looks for the polarization of the light and navigates by it. So we can, you know, polarization of light is a little hard to detect sometimes. So it's pretty amazing what biology can do. I would never say never. There's always the chance that biology is detecting and responding to something. And certainly, you know, if we're immersed in it all the time, we're adapted to it. But as like Joe Mercola pointed out and others have pointed out before him, the electromagnetic soup that we live in today is something like 80 million times stronger than it was in 1850.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't had any evolutionary chance to adapt to it.
You know, so I thought for sure by now, because I probably talked about this 8 or 9 years ago on my show, but I would have thought for sure by now someone would have started a national franchise business where they take a spectrum analyzer out to your house, they plop it down in your bedroom, and they go, see all these frequencies, all these pips here? That, these are coming right into this room right here. This is what you're sleeping in. And then they go out and they get carbon fiber paint. They paint the walls. They paint the floor. They put the rugs back down. They repaint the rooms. You know, and now they take that spectrum analyzer in there, and there's two little pips getting in, you know, through the windows. No. I mean, I can't believe nobody's done that yet.
Well, there are people who are sort of chipping away at it. You might know there's some experts. One of them, she's pretty public, Magda Havis up in Canada, around Toronto at Guelph. She is pretty well known about it. A lot of people think she's super fringe and, you know, she's one of those people. But actually, I know her pretty well. She's visited me at my laboratory a couple times. And she's pretty big in the whole electromagnetic, you know, electrosmog kind of thing. And she works with people who do a lot of, like, you know, cleaning up the electromagnetism in your house, and you can go around and measure it, you know, and stuff like that, and sort of basically building, you know, structures around your house. You could build up your rooms into a Faraday cage, and you can really exclude a lot of the stuff if that's what you want to do.
But then are you excluding the good stuff? Assuming that there is good stuff, and like I really know what I'm talking about, are you also excluding the stuff that's literally resonating out of the earth that you want to get
well,
to you?
This is the thing. It's first of all, we don't know all the stuff that's good and necessary yet. I think the science is incomplete on that. You know, we're still figuring out the benefits and the necessity of having sunlight. You know, it's still something we're learning about. We don't know if there's other frequencies that, you know, other wavelengths that are important biologically. I did put something up on the internet about a year ago, maybe half a year ago, to describe the entire electromagnetic spectrum and talk about areas where we need to have that energy versus areas where we probably ought to stay away from it. You know, if you think about sunlight, sunlight's on the electromagnetic spectrum, and that's
right.
Generally pretty good, right?
Right.
You think about the beneficial effects of ultraviolet, they're there, you know, for vitamin D and other sorts of things, but then there's also the risks of ultraviolet. When you look at infrared, you know, warmth and heat, radiated warmth and heat, that's really biologically good, right? But it's not so clear that microwaves are helpful to us biologically.
Right.
So that's a maybe. That's kind of a maybe. And same thing with radio waves. You know, that maybe we need them and maybe we don't. But then you get down below radio waves, you know, you get down below 1,000 hertz or something, and then we're talking about physiologic frequencies. And right, you need to have certain electromagnetic pulses just to run your nervous system, you know, to contract muscles. You know, you got fast twitch and slow twitch nerves, and there's a lot of things physiologically going on in the range of, you know, a few hertz, you know, tens of hertz maybe. So there's areas in the electromagnetic spectrum that are very beneficial and essential for life, and there are areas that are kind of, you know, both positive and negative, like ultraviolet, and there's areas that are just destructive, you know, like ionizing radiation. But on the other hand, there's a lot of theories that say ionizing radiation is bad for individuals, but it's really, really good and necessary for evolution, right? So they say that one of the big evolutionary, there's a correlation between how quickly species evolve and, you know, the long cycles of the solar irradiation, where if we get more solar irradiation for long periods of time, I'm talking about like thousands of years, they'll see more speciation and mutations and
but most of them are, well, it depends on who you choose as your mate, but these could also be seen as evolutionary steps. I mean, we've actually improved, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So they're thinking things like ice ages really helped humans evolve a bigger brain. So an ice age kills a lot of individuals, but as a species it makes us stronger, right? Same thing with ionizing radiation from the sun. You know, it's going to kill individuals, but it's going to cause mutations that can accelerate, adaptation and evolution and, you know, mutations and stuff like that. So there's, you know, individual costs. You know, everybody takes one for the team, but maybe that's pushing the rate of our genetic evolution, like random mutations, forward.
You know, see, but here's what I come back to, right? And I know that we just can't, like, turn off the switch and go, okay, we're not going to live with any of the entrapments of modern technology. We're just going to do without it. But the reality is that we are trying to live in an environment that is counter to the environment that we spent hundreds of thousands and even millions of years evolving under. And I don't think this is one that we can negotiate our way out of. I think you're right. I think that the deleterious effects of RF are evident. If your eyes are open, it's the lowest common denominator. It's why we can't put our fingers on certain diseases. It's because what we keep forgetting to ask people when we ask them, do they smoke cigarettes, is do you live next to a router? Do you have a cordless phone in your home? Try to evaluate how much RF they're being exposed to. And then try to figure, because I'm telling you, they'll start connecting dots very quickly. I'm not wearing a tin hat here. I'm being sincere. They're going to look back at this time 100 years from now and go, holy crap, what were we thinking, like living exposed to that stuff?
Well, there's historical precedent for this. I mean, you know, we used to use a lot of lead in paint, and we used to use a huge amount of lead in plumbing and stuff like that. I mean, it was big.
Hell, we used to seam vegetable cans with it.
Yeah, exactly, and it was a big contributor, I think, to the fall of the Roman Empire. Right? I mean, a bunch of people lead poisoning, and so you know, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think that we're just not smart enough to have learned how to avoid that entirely. And we're doing this, I think, now with GMO foods, and I think we're doing it with a lot of things that we inject into our environment that really don't belong there, you know? And it's harming animals, and it's harming humans directly. Some of the things we do are good, and some of the things we do are pretty ill-advised.
The one frequency that seems to baffle me is 60 cycle, right? Early on, the 60 cycle AC was said to impair the melatonin pulse before bed if you slept close to within the vicinity of your head an AC device with basically the cord is like an antenna. Now I see research on 60 cycle being good. My the thing I worry about is we're becoming more like the pharmaceutical industry. We want to separate out one thing instead of letting it occur naturally in the environment that it evolved from, that we plucked it from. I mean, isn't this the other problem with like just looking at this frequency and that frequency?
Well, see, there's problems with science. Actually, it's pretty fundamental. There are areas of science where you can get very low rate of repeatability. So some of these things that are published scientifically are very questionable. Like in the field of cancer research, they've looked at the quality of the literature recently, within the last couple of years, and found that between 75 and 89% of it can't be reproduced. So a lot of the science that we have is bunk. There's a whole book written about this, which is excellent, by an NPR health and medicine reporter, Richard Harris. It's called Rigor Mortis. And if you haven't read it, boy, that's a great, I think every adult should read that book. It's called Rigor Mortis by Richard Harris. You can get it on Amazon. And he talks about part of the problem with our scientific knowledge for health is that there's all these biases built into it, and the research itself is really questionable. And, you know, the problem, you know, I can say this as a professional scientist, I can tell you there's a publication bias. You are five times more likely to be able to publish a positive result than a negative result. So that biases everything towards, you know, being able to show everything. So if you want to show that 60 hertz is good, you can do it and you can publish it. If you show that it's, you know, no effect, then it's very hard to publish. But if you want to show that it's bad, you can do that too.
So at what level is that? At what level is that, at the journal level, or is there some place? Okay, so the journals.
This is kind of like
what we're seeing in the media today with politics. It's going on with science publications.
It really is, and most people don't understand this. Most people think of science as fairly pure. Believe it or not, I'm actually writing a book about this, and man, I get so hot about it when I think about it. I get just really angry. So I read a lot, you know, a lot of it's not stuff I want to actually publish, but I need to pare it down. It's about 1,000 pages now, but I need to get it down to a couple hundred pages so people can actually read it and talk about, you know, from the trenches, what's really wrong with science. So the problem, the fundamental problem that we have, Carl, is that you really just can't trust what's been published. And there's a huge bias, and it's wrong in science about a lot of things. And let me give you a really compelling example, okay? A friend of mine who's a neurophysiologist was at a meeting with the United States military, and it was about traumatic brain injury. It was a really big, high-powered meeting. I think one of the undersecretaries for defense was there. It was a really big deal. And he showed our data on how we could really improve traumatic brain injury with PEMF, right? and like a very high level person in the Department of Defense. He just rocketed out of his chair and he starts screaming. He's like, "That is the best data I've ever seen. We have got to get that to the market now. We've got to get that to the warfighter." Blah, blah, blah. Just how positive it was because the data was really strong. And then he said, he asked the question, he said, "What drug was that?" And my colleague said, "Well, it's not a drug, it's PEMF." And then the guy looked down at his feet, shuffled around a little bit, said, "Well, it's probably just a placebo effect," and went back to his seat. So you see, there's these biases built in. If it's not a drug, it can't be real, right? If it's not what people want to hear, then they just tune it out. And that's a fact.
Really,
this happens really at the level of journals, and it happens at the level of funding. I mean, these guys were doling out millions of dollars for research, right? They don't want to hear about something that's effective. They just want to hear about what they want to hear. And that's a fact.
Well, and that's why there's shows like this, you know, 13 plus years.
There you go.
No, it's the truth. I mean, you know, I know you just did something with Joe McCullough. I mean, there's an army of us out there, too, now that are bringing, you know, and see, for years I've been saying when science contradicts what you know to be true, choose critical thinking always. Because I'd
every
rather
time.
Die. I'd rather die because of a miscalculation of mine than die as a miscalculation of somebody else who isn't going to be the one that
you're from Brooklyn, right? I mean, you get the same kind of mindset that I do from Detroit, which is, you know, you're going to figure it out yourself, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to trust anybody, and you know, you want to. It's really true, and I keep telling people that, you know, a lot of people call me and ask, you know, "Dr. Dennis, you're the expert. Tell me the truth and everything." And I tell them the truth is they got to figure it out for themselves, and I'll give them some resources. But this is actual, you know, people need to think critically. And they also, when you're thinking critically, right, you got to have an open mind. For example, like I say, I'm wrong most of the time. Like when I was telling those guys at NASA about how stupid an idea it was to use PEMF, then we did the experiment. Holy mackerel, I was wrong, right? I was totally wrong. But you know what I did? I did one thing right. I followed the data. You know, I was wrong. I said, "Okay, well, I got this one wrong. Boy, there really is an effect." And that changed my opinion on it. And I went with the data. I repeated the data. I didn't believe the experiment the first time. I forced the guys there to repeat it. So we did. We got the same answer. So it was real. It was real. It was true. Right? So you got to think critically. But what you'll find is that even a lot of scientists, they don't do that. They already know what they want the answer to be, and they'll just keep doing the experiment over and over again until they get the answer they want.
And that's why I feel like, as a taxpayer, I would like all taxpayers to demand that the NIH publish everything that they spend money on, everything they approve,
you know what?
And everything that they don't approve of, even if it's partial studies that didn't complete. We deserve to see that, since that's our tax dollars going to pay that.
That is exactly right. And then, like, part of that book I'm writing, you know, on this whole topic is exactly that, which is we've got to reform the NIH, and it's got to be, you know, so, I mean, I can tell you where the big parts of the problems are. Part of it's the NIH. It does just simply will squelch research. I've submitted unbelievably strong data on the effect of PEMF on cytokines. And,
yeah, no,
you know,
it doesn't fit their menu.
It doesn't fit their model, and it gets wiped out. And I submitted really strong data to the Defense Department on the effect of PEMF on spinal recovery, you know, from spinal injury. And they told me that, you know, my proposal was at the top of the list, and they were absolutely certain it was going to get funded. And then I got blackballed, and they just said, "Nope, not interested. Don't call us." Boom. You know, because somebody somewhere didn't like it. So this is what is happening with your tax dollars. And you're, you know, as taxpayers, what I think is going to happen, Carl, is that a bunch of us like you and me, we're going to pick up the pitchforks, and we're going to force a change in the government, because it has to be that way. There's really a suppression of the truth now, because
and that is a problem with America today. Not only is it that, but honesty is at an all-time low in a population. We have people willing to stand next to videos of them doing something and looking at the video and looking back into the camera going, "That's not me. I didn't do that."
Yep.
I mean, honesty is, and that's permeating everything. The journals are lying. The media is lying. Every place you get your information from, they're culling information and they're feeding you what they want. That's why if you are devoid of critical thinking today, you are really, and I've said it. I've said it for years. I've said the new evolutionary selection pressure is where you get your information from.
Yep.
That's going to be whether or not you have offspring someday. We're going to take a break and come right back with Dr. Robert Dennis. I got two more really good questions. Stay tuned.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Sleep is one of the most important factors in maintaining health and longevity. And in today's environment, with all the artificial light we're exposed to, there is nothing more important to use to protecting your sleep than blue blocking glasses. And there's only one blue blocking glasses that I will trust ever, and that's Blue Blocks. BLUBLOX. If you go to the website blueblocks.com and use the code SHR15, you'll save 15% off the single best blue blocking glasses in the world, because you can wear them comfortably and still function, watch TV, work on your computer, but it blocks all of the important blue and green light that has been responsible for shutting down melatonin production and causing people to sleep poorly. Don't waste another night of sleep without wearing Blue Blocks, BLUBLOX, tonight. Put them on at 7 p.m. and you'll be asleep by 9 p.m. and you'll get the best night's sleep you've ever had. If you've never used them before, you are missing out. Blueblocks.com. Use the code SHR15 to save 15% off.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
I forgot how easy it is to produce a show when there's no video involved. We're talking with Dr. Robert Dennis. Yeah, I'm a one-man show, literally, Doc. So it's just me, and I produce video, live Facebook Live, and audio at the same time. Micro-pulse.com is the website if you want to communicate more. I only have two questions left, and I know I only had you booked for the hour, but we may go a couple minutes over. Is that okay?
Hey, you can talk as long as you want. Yeah.
Okay. So
clear the afternoon.
Where do you stand on the whole grounding thing?
Well, that's actually a good question. I think that grounding yourself is a good idea, and I do it. I actually have the earthing, sleeping, sheets and stuff like that with a silver thread in them.
Right.
I think that grounding is pretty good. Now, I talked to Joe Mercola about this a bunch of times, and he did an about face on this last year. It was last summer. It was right before I went to a meeting that had him, and he had a big talk where he was going to talk about the importance of grounding. He got up there and he said, no, don't ground yourself. Don't do it, because you're grounding yourself. You have to ground yourself to a nice, clean ground, and you can't do that in the United States because, the return paths are for the power stations are right through the ground, and they're all dirty already. So if you ground yourself, you're actually making it worse. Right.
Well, I mean, that's now he's not right about that, but. I mean, the real issue. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say. So where do I stand on that? Well, I don't know. I think grounding yourself pretty well if you can is a good idea. And I suggested some designs to him for a product that could take a lot of that noise out and everything and still effectively ground you. So I guess my answer is, my geeky nerd answer is, there's good places to ground yourself, like on a beach, like next to a big salty body of water. That's a pretty good place. Mm. And you know, if you can do it, that's a pretty good place. And there could be and there should be products that would take out a lot of this noise that's superimposed and still give you the ability to ground yourself. So I think it's something that's good, and I think if it's done properly, it's probably very good, and I don't know that the technology has really been worked out yet.
Okay, so let me tell you what my thoughts are, and then you correct me. Because
I'll give you my opinion.
You know what I mean. You understand a lot of this from the science standpoint. So my theory is having silver threads in your underwear or your sheets is a bad idea, because if we know anything about RF, that is a conductor. It will attenuate. But the theory is that it's going to go to a sink. It's going to go to the ground. It's going to get sucked right off. Why not just never bring it near you and make something that's made out of a very, very dense carbon fiber, and you don't even have to ground it, and you are shielded from RF and EMF?
Yeah, so you're talking about the difference between grounding and a Faraday cage, right?
Yeah, like a ferrite bead type of a technology or something like that.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think it's, you know, because it's a complicated issue. I'm not dodging it. I'm just saying it's, you know, complex, right? There's probably several approaches that you ought to consider. One of them is shielding it out, and the other one is anything that gets through, you want to tap it off and ground it out, right? So I think probably a combination of those two things is probably the best thing. Like, you know, you could, in principle, you could imagine wearing a jumpsuit that's made out of like metal or a carbon fiber that would shield it. That's one thing that would actually work pretty well. But then the other thing is, you know, you could imagine shoes that have, and there are products like this that have built into them the ability to conduct, you know, charge from your foot to the ground. And so you could imagine, you know, just articles of clothing that would do this sort of thing pretty well. There's a few like technical sort of geeky details you could put in there to make them work better.
Wow. It could be like children's clothing. Remember when you were young and your pants connected to your jacket and your gloves connected to your sleeves?
Absolutely.
Continuous.
Snap together clothing like that.
Yeah.
You could do that. And, you know, I could imagine that would be pretty good, you know, and I wouldn't want people to feel like they have to walk around, you know, wearing tin hats or anything like that. But on the other hand, you know, if you want to take this technology to its extreme, you know, you really could. But, you know, I think in the long run, it's better to clean up the environment so that you don't have to shield yourself from the environment. Because like you're saying, some of that stuff's good and you want it to get through, and some of that stuff's not so good. You know, like if you shield yourself too much from the sun, that can be as much of a problem as not shielding yourself enough. So.
Absolutely. Okay, so for those of us early adopters and geeky guys and gals who actually have PEMF units, and they have a variety of them out there, and many of them have certain adjustabilities, you can adjust them from like a half a hertz up to 21 hertz. Some of them, you can adjust the power output in Gauss, what the magnets actually producing. Some claim you should sleep with them under your bed to spend 8 hours at a time. What's best practices? If someone is looking for, wait a minute, what should we be looking for from our magnets first, and then how do we achieve it?
Well, okay, so I wish I could tell you this in a simple way. But that's a really complex question. Part of it is the science is not complete, so we don't really, really know what's best, right? And then the technology is non-standardized. So much of what people advertise for their PEMF systems, and these are not generally built by scientists and engineers, most of the PEMF stuff you can buy on the market is actually a copy or a pirate of something that was done by somebody earlier, like a scientist. So, like, you know, there's no standards. When they say square wave, it's totally not clear what they mean by that. I mean, how trapezoidal. There is technically, physically, there's no such thing as a square wave. All square waves are actually trapezoidal because there's a little bit of a slope going up, right? You can't instantly go from zero to something. So I think when I sharpen my pencil up and actually do some calculations, you know, being a nerd, the thing about PEMF that matters the most is how steep that slope is on the square wave, and virtually nobody tells you that.
Theoretically, if it looks more like a camel's hump, that's not so good. But if it looks like
that's exactly
if it looks like one of the Washington Monument, that's probably pretty good. You know, goes up and goes down.
Correct.
Boom. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, like, you and I were sort of talking about this before, but basically, if you do some differential equations and do some calculations, and you calculate back to the kinds of electromagnetic energy that you see during development, which is exactly what I did. You know, like, what sort of nerve and muscle activation do you see during development? And then I did some calculus, some differential equations, and made sure that my waveforms would transform back to that. You know, like basically fast to slow twitch muscles, really, really critical during muscle growth and development, right? So all the devices that I make do that, but they do it through like the calculus of the first time derivatives of the square waves. So when I try to, I actually try to help these people, even my competitors, because I don't want any junky PEMF stuff on the market, right? Because that hurts everybody, just undermines credibility. So I try to explain this to them, and, you know, their eyes roll back in their head, you know, like how many Gauss, what's the frequency, you know, the wrong questions. The right question is you got to understand electromagnetism, and then you got to do some calculus, okay? That's the right answer. And you do have to make it, you do have, it does have to be steep. And based on my measurements, it needs to be somewhere in the range of 200 to 1 or 2 million kilogauss per second. You know, gauss per second, actually, 200,000 to 2 million gauss per second needs to be the slope of that leading and trailing edge.
Right.
And that turns out mathematically to relate exactly, directly, to an induced electric field inside the collapsing or expanding magnetic field, which is saturating all your tissues that are being stimulated. That seems to have a biological effect, and I've been able to show that time and again by experiments.
What things have you shown under its influence? What things have you shown?
Well, so we did that first experiment at NASA, and that was a head scratcher for me because they kept saying, "Oh, it's got to be the frequency of the Gauss," and then I started doing some math, and I'm like, "No, actually, it's not." And then we did an experiment with some rabbits looking at bone regrowth for a big bone defect that was surgically induced in rabbits at Texas A&M. And we found that it was not the frequency and not the Gauss, but it was the rate at which the magnetic field was turned on or off. It needed to be above 150 kilogauss per second, 150 to 200. And then we subsequently did some more experiments with it. And I did some experiments with a big biological company called Charles River, where we were actually measuring swelling and inflammation. And we can actually do this experiment. It's a standardized experiment used by drug companies to find non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, right? And all of these are discovered by actually they inject a mouse or a rat hind paw with this substance called carrageenan, which is highly inflammatory, and it causes their paw to swell for like 8 hours. And then you give them
the carrageenan that they put in your ice cream. That carrageenan.
Exactly.
I know.
The same
There's
stuff,
so much
right?
gel and crap. That's another problem. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. So if you inject that, you get a short but very intense inflammatory response. And all NSAIDs, every single one of them is tested and discovered by how they affect the carrageenan, you know, challenge. And our device was, you know, I had it tested here at Charles River, which is just 18 miles from my house. But this is the place on Earth where they do that experiment for everything. And when you adjust the electromagnetic fields properly to get the right slope of the magnetism, you can eliminate almost all of that inflammation. In fact, the director of the Inflammation Studies Laboratory at Charles River called me up the morning after the experiment, and he said that was the most amazing data he's ever seen. He's never seen any electromagnetic device in his 38 years of doing this research actually have the effect. And my answer was, well, they probably just weren't tuned properly.
Right.
You know, so but I that, think but I
that, that
you,
in order to create that steep of a waveform, the not the switching alone on and off, but the power behind that switching. I mean, that has to be a lot of power on and off for just a gentle time. You know what I mean?
It's got to be just right. And so you're an RF guy. So what I'm telling you is the shorthand version is you got to have a tuned RCL circuit, right? So you got to have a tuned circuit with the right impedance, output impedance from your power source, enough power, the right resistance, the right capacitance, and the right inductance.
Right.
And that's what all these other people miss. So, you know, what they do to correct for missing it is that they just make it really powerful so that you can turn it up really high. And that's why you end up with so many of these super high power PEMF devices, is because most of that energy is there just to try to boost you know, just to try to get an effect.
Make you feel something. And depending on how many conductors your body has absorbed over the years, you may feel it a lot more than you want to.
That's exactly the problem, because now they're pushing it to such an extreme, you're going to get some negative side effects from EMF, which is what we don't want. We don't need that. Right. And just, you know, talking about a little bit of radio frequency hygiene here, you know, we want to have things not put out RF. That's not necessary. So according to my calculations and the experiments prove, you know, they support this. If you actually do the calculus and you tune the circuit correctly, just to get the right sharpness of the rising and falling edge on the wave pulses, you can remove 99.8% of the energy in each pulse, but still get the same beneficial biological effect.
Wow.
And so that's why I'm doing this, because that's what people need to do. And it's so hard to convince the guys who manufacture this, hey, man, they just want to turn the crank and make some money. And I'm just like, whoa, you know, slow down. Let's do this right, you know. So you can take 99.8, and that's not just a guess. That's a calculation.
Well, because also the higher the power consumption of the unit, you're building all this Gauss, bigger power supplies, bigger power supply circuits, the boards are
more
durable,
copper.
A lot more heat, they're not as durable, they don't last as long.
A lot more copper. That's why these things are $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, right? And that's why the ones I make are really small, but they're only a few hundred bucks, right? And you can run mine on a camcorder battery. I mean, like, you know, some of the competitors, you got to plug them in and make the lights go down.
Yeah.
Because they suck so much power. Because I think that 99.8% of the power in those high power machines is really a waste.
Right.
And I don't think it does any good other than generating heat. You know, it's a very inefficient and expensive way to warm things up.
Have you seen the research? I want to say it came out of the University of Kentucky. But I may have it confused with a tobacco paper I read a few years ago, that they took a PMF unit and they sprouted beans with them. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I heard about that. I think that's pretty cool. But
the seedlings that were given the electromagnetic pulse from beneath the pot grew much faster and much larger than the ones that were deprived of that PEMF.
Well, you know, I mean, PEMF has, I mean, there, like I said, there's about 1,000 papers now on PEMF, and it's everything you can imagine, from, you know, aches and pains and muscle, you know, sprains and bone defects and vision and kidney function and liver function and breast cancer and prostate, you know, you name it. There's papers on it, two or three or four papers, and sometimes dozens, showing beneficial effects of PEMF. And I think, frankly, I think it's the other half of medicine that we've been ignoring for 110 years.
Yeah, and I'm with you on this. And that's why I've had one for 15 years, because I just knew it was, like, it just made sense. It was like, yeah, you know, these electromagnetic fields, coming from RF, I knew they could harm. And I was like,
right.
So maybe there's some that are beneficial, some that we have evolved under the influence of, and so you're just replacing them, because we live in this noisy
yep.
world now.
That's the way I see it. You know, the ones that I have, they're calculated to have the end effect in tissue that is exactly native to the kinds of electromagnetic stimulation you see during normal activity and exercise, right? That's what my devices are programmed to do. It's calculated to do that. It's not just something random. So it doesn't have to be some precise frequency or some precise Gauss. But it does have to be in what I think of as, you know, the physiologic range.
Right.
And if you do that, the tissue responds as if you're exercising. And if anyone on earth knows, you know, there's a benefit to exercise.
If you
right?
do, I but mean, if you do it right. If you do
if
it
you
right.
Do it right, yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be precise. It's just got to be about right. And you got to do it rather than not doing it. And that's basically what my device does, is it simulates the electromagnetic pulses that you get during growth and development. And exercise.
So I use mine at night, and some people do as well, who found that they do help in sleep. And there is valid evidence on this from a hospital in the UK that designed a bonnet. It looks like an old air pilot in a leather helmet, and it's got strategically placed magnets that pulse and increase serotonin production in the brain and make people sleep better. And they're not popular. I don't know why. I mean, maybe you spend an hour with that thing on your head and you don't need to take an SSRI, but I don't know. Who am I? But anyway, you know, many of us sleep with it. You think it's wise to sleep with it, to spend a longer period of time under the influence of it, or almost, and I kind of think of it as two things. It's the intrinsic value of the electromagnetic field, but then the cocoon value of it, kind of creating destructive interference of all the other incident RF from your neighbor's router and the kid up the street cell phone.
You know, I got to be honest with you. That's something I just don't know. I think that a lot of what we need to figure out about PEMF, you know, I did as much as I could from the theoretical standpoint and tried to bring it to experiment and then see what really works. But I think that a huge amount of what we need to do in studying PEMF is people need to try it for different things, because one thing you do not see in the literature, scientific literature or the clinical literature, is you do not see deleterious negative side effects from PEMF.
Yeah.
Even people who write scathing reviews against it, they say, well, at least it doesn't seem to hurt anybody, right? So it's something that seems like people could be and should be experimenting with, in my opinion. And I think that most of the really useful information that we're going to get in the next 20 years on PEMF is going to be very useful clinical personal observations. You know, hey, it really helps us sleep, and hey, it really helps with this and that. And then the science can come after that, you know, 20, 30, 40 years and figure it out why that is.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, even as a hardcore scientist, I'm thinking the best thing to do here are make intelligent observations. And as you say, N equals many of them, right, just as many as you can. And you start to see patterns. I'm starting to do like a crowdsource study on this, you know, crowdsourcing to figure out what's true and what works best for PEMF. And that's something you can find. I'll have a pointer to that on my webpage pretty soon. We've got a webpage coming out probably in the next day or two called Flux Health. And it's all about, you know, taking every scrap of information we can find anywhere on the planet about PEMF, everything from personal opinions to clinical findings to published research, you know, everything we can. And then sort of putting it all together and saying, you know, PEMF, does it really seem to help for this or that? And you start to see patterns, right? For chronic pain and orthopedic injury, you know, 80 or 90% of the time or more, it seems to be very beneficial, right? But for things like tinnitus, it doesn't seem to help much at all.
Right.
Or it maybe even makes it worse, right? It can tend to make people a little dizzier. It actually does that to me if I put it on my head. So I don't wear PEMF on my head unless I need to. But then you start to ask questions like, does it really help for cancer? Yeah, big question mark. I don't know. So many people tell me, they swear by it. They say, that's what I did.
But there is a study that I found when I was out at Quest Nutrition a couple years ago. I found a study that implicated PEMF and doing something beneficial to tumor cells. I just don't remember it. It was just
absolutely. This is the thing, but you know, you always have to be a little bit skeptical about scientific literature. You never want to take one paper. You know, you can really start to believe.
Well, wait a minute. Except when it agrees with your bias, then you have to take it.
Well, then, that's right. if you got a bias and someone tells you what you want to hear, then go with it, man. That's right. But you know what I'm saying? It's like when you start to see something replicated, like by different laboratories, different people doing, you know, things with different equipment, they start to see the same results, you know, in a diverse population. That means like everybody walking around on Earth, right? They should have, you know, roughly large masses of people statistically, they should have the same benefits or the same, you know, effects of what you're seeing. And this is the thing that we've lost a lot about in our modern scientific research, is that they keep sharpening the population they're studying to such a narrow range that a lot of their research is just not relevant. I mean, there's quote unquote cures for cancer that only work for a certain strain of mouse of a certain age of a certain gender. And even for that species of mouse, if you change the age or the gender or even the food they're eating or even the bedding they're sleeping on, that cure for that type of cancer doesn't work anymore. That's actually known. Okay. And so like if it's so sensitive that different types of mice don't get a benefit from that cure, then what makes you think a diverse population of humans would, right? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just I was just Googling to see if I could find something I could inject somebody and turn them into a rodent so that we can cure their cancer, then bring them back to being human. I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
But gee, my thing is that you're starting to see this with a lot of things like statin drugs and other things that are approved.
Yeah.
They're approved at such a narrow range of people. Like a lot of these experiments, they don't include women or they don't include people like in a certain age range. You know, I mean, people who are like your age and my age in their mid-50s, we respond to orthopedic injuries different than a 16-year-old, you know. So you need to look at this diversity, and science has is lacking two things when it comes to health. It's lacking repeatability, and, it's, you know, people need to repeat the same experiment, different place, different conditions, but the same basic experiment. And number two, it lacks diversity. So, if you know, you got to be really careful when you're looking at a single paper, because it's got those kinds of deficiencies kind of baked into it.
Right. And, you know, I think a lot of scientists look at reproducibility as a threat. If it doesn't reproduce the second time, it doesn't mean your first one was wrong. It means that you didn't do something the second time that you did the first time. Go figure it out.
There
you know,
you
it's
go.
Like
there
if people if people were really invested in their missions, they would work on it until it just happens that, you know, light bulb 4,677 stayed lit. You know, but there's no real conviction in science, to be honest with you.
No. The way science works now, it's really kind of sick and everything. I'm writing about this, but basically, the way you have to, what you have to do to be a successful scientist in academia is that you have to discover something new, publish it once, get funding for it, and then move on. Yeah. There is no support in at the journal level, at the university level, or at the federal level. So at every important level, science is not supported the way it needs to be. I mean, the NIH needs to go 100% into the support of trying to replicate existing research.
They
do a terrible job. They do a terrible job at doing new stuff. So they need to focus on what they're good at, which is, okay, you guys were able to do it over here in Lab A in California. Can you guys over here in, you know, Bethesda, Maryland, do the same thing with different people, different, you know, that's what they need to focus on.
Right.
And universities need to stop hustling money from the federal government. I mean, talk about, you know, this white collar welfare thing they got going on at universities. It is sick. I'm telling you, man.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of scientists out there that they literally live fantastic lives just from grant to grant. And, you know,
they totally do, man. Yeah. You know, a lot of my colleagues feel very entitled about, you know, the taxpayer is just stupid. They don't understand. They have to pay for my very important research. And I've told some of my colleagues, I'm like, you know, dude, you've never done anything. You've never contributed anything. Yeah, I get kind of pissed off, get a few beers in me, you know, but, you know, some truth serum and start telling them what I really think. And I'm just like, you know, when was the last time you did something that helped anybody? And at a typical university scientist, that's not what they're focused on. They're focused on their ego and their next grant and their next promotion. And, you know, we need to rebuild the system from the ground up. We need to make it so that the incentives are for scientists who are not real concerned about personal, you know, enrichment, about, you know, their egos, but people who are genuinely trying to help people. But if that's the kind of scientist you are in academia, man, the roadblocks are huge. The federal government stops you, and the university will stop you, and journals will stop you from being able to say the things that need to be said and do the careful work that needs to be done. It just doesn't happen.
It's actually sad because we're all suffering as a result of this corruption.
Well, we really are. You know, we've been paying for decades. We're just not getting the work.
So I want to jump back on the Schumann resonance because I look at everything through evolutionary perspectives, everything. I look at why would we be endowed with that? Why would that be counter to our current physiology? Well, you know, these are the questions I ask myself as part of my critical thinking when I see something and I'm developing my own opinion of it. And so I keep thinking that, yes, we evolved under the influence of, and I use that word specifically, influence, because I feel that the ionosphere's activity with the core of the Earth, which ends up being the Schumann resonance, played some role in our cellular development and maybe our genetics and so on and so forth. And these are beneficial because, as we talked about before, selection pressure theoretically makes you better and better and better. And if it makes you worse and worse and worse, then you go extinct. And that's not saying we can't do that, by the way. But should we be looking at the Schumann wave for any information at all about what PEMF may actually hold in store? First question. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I've actually done some experiments on that. And so I would say that, you know, what my experiments showed were kind of surprising. So I had a bunch of people, about 4 years ago who were saying, I need to have Schumann. I need to have Schumann. Can you program Schumann into my devices? And I said, okay, well, we're going to do like some beta testing here. And I gave a bunch of people some of my devices that had Schumann frequencies programmed right into them. And they were quite precise.
But there's a lot of them. The Schumann resonances, everything from a half a hertz up to like 27.
There's tons of them. There's subharmonics.
Yeah.
Harmonics. That's right. So you're right. So it's not simple. But I was able to, you know, I did some that were a pattern. And then I did a pattern that was offset from that randomly. So it had no Schumann resonances. It was all about the same frequency range, you know, 8, 9, 10 hertz, you know, 15, 16, 17, instead of the Schumann resonances. And I had a bunch of devices programmed that way. And you know what the result was? The qualitative pilot study result was that the device that I built with the offset frequencies, which I now sell, I call them Omni 8 because it's 8 different frequencies that are offset from and different from the Schumann resonances, people judge that to be about 15% better.
At what?
At reducing pain and accelerating healing.
Okay, so recovery, basically.
So that's what we were looking at. So like if I was having people rate their pain and how much their pain improved, that was the result of my beta test. So is it 100% controlled scientific experiment? No. But you know what? I was careful about it. I think it's just like observing, you know, you can look out the window and you can say, yeah, it's raining. You know, you don't need to do statistics to observe a lot of things in life. And what I'm saying is that people didn't see any really big difference between Schumann versus Schumann, you know, close to Schumann frequencies, but not right on the resonances in the primaries, right? So I guess my point is that I think you benefit from having signals, pulsing signals, at about that frequency, but not precisely that frequency.
Yeah, like that, it's not that frequency that's playing. Because something that you just mentioned, that, you know, there are harmonics. Anytime there's multiple frequencies, and some of those harmonics are constructive, and they will produce offspring frequencies first, you know, usually odd first, third, fifth, and so on harmonics. You know, you take two frequencies, you put them together, and they find their common undulation, and that third frequency pops out of there. But then some of them are destructive in nature, where they kind of cancel each other out. And that's what makes the study of, you know, I've thought about how to study the Schumann resonance, right? So like first I would like to look at what frequencies are where, and then I'd like to look at the topographical map of those areas and see if there's any characteristics that make you go, interesting. They all seem to be these types of areas. I know we've all done this, and now people are going to say, Carl, you're crazy, but we've all gone to cities. We've all gone to places where we just felt at home. Like, man, I love, and we'll say this, I love the energy in such and such.
Right.
And what if that actual Schumann resonance you're experiencing in that city is this Schumann resonance that you experienced when you popped out of your mom?
Hey, could be. You know, it could be. It's something that I was, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about because I've experienced it myself. I have no idea what it is, though.
I don't know. I just think that the pulse electromagnetic field devices and the study of PEMF and better understanding the role that the Schumann resonance, the natural heartbeat of the Earth, played on our trajectory, I kind of feel like there's going to be amazing discoveries. Unfortunately, those amazing discoveries are going to go make us go, oh, crap, you know that router I have? It's really effing me up.
It really is. You know, I think you're right. I think that I think a lot of it is sort of like gives you sort of like these approximate ranges that your body expects. And, you know, maybe the body is not expecting some exact Schumann frequency because, you know, that varies, as you know, from time to time, place to place. But it's expecting something in about that range. And if you don't get it, you know, your external input is incomplete.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that you have competition. Listen, it's really been fascinating. I think this interview is filled with so many. Oh, I know someone's going to say, Carl, but you didn't ask him. Period of exposure to PEMF, regardless of what frequency you're using, what Gauss, maybe not it's at nighttime, but how long should people experience the effects of the PEMF unit? And should it be site specific, just on the area where the pain is or you want to heal?
Well, so this is my opinion.
Right.
It seems to be what works best for me, and it seems to be what seems to be sort of missing from the marketplace is a super low power focal use. So you're not talking about a whole body. You're talking about just a focal area. And as you know, because of the RF energy, if you're just talking about a focal area, right, you're talking about energizing, putting a magnetic field in through a much smaller volume. So you're talking about much less power. So you can, a small unit, you can use batteries, right, instead of plugging it in. So you take all that into account, the practical electronic stuff, right, and the practical biology of it seems to be that if you're not using excessive amounts of energy, your body tolerates it very well 24/7. Like I wear one just because I'm trying to, and I'm very successful with both of my hips. I'm trying to avoid like hip replacement surgeries, right? And I just wear them very low energy across my hips 24/7, and all the pain just goes away, And it just, they seem to be getting better and stronger rather than weaker. But it does take a lot of time during the day, and you got to have a mobile unit, and you got to do it for months, right? Because as you know, articular cartilage doesn't exactly grow back like muscle or anything. So, I think that it sort of depends. If you're talking about a super high power whole body PEMF thing, I would limit the exposure just because you're sucking in so much energy, right? And we don't know the effects of that. But if you've got like a low power PEMF system, people seem to tolerate them very, very well. Hours per day, every day.
Two things. There was a guy on my show about 7 years ago, named Dr. Alan Dunn, and he used to practice in Florida, and he specialized in giving intra-articular growth hormone injections to people who wanted to avoid knee replacement or hip replacement surgeries. He had a lot of NFL players that he worked with. I think he's passed away because his website has been down for the past couple of years. I want to invite him back on. He was old when I had him on, but he was training other doctors, other orthopedic surgeons to do this type of thing. And it's once a week, 3 weeks in a row, and you're done. And literally cartilage grows back in the joint. The vascularization starts first. He came on and told the whole story. He had research published. Right. It was fascinating. And all of a sudden, I just thought to myself, man, if you combined intra-articular growth hormone injections and your pulse device, I mean, you could probably make a dent in the hip and knee replacement industry in the United States.
Well, actually, there's something I want to tell you about because you're going right in that direction. And I've talked to maybe 160 or 170 different clinicians who are, caregivers for people. And one of the things that I did not expect about PEMF, but seems to be true, is that PEMF, as far as I can tell, is like the ultimate adjunct treatment that I know of. It seems to make everything else work better. I mean, I've had naturopaths and chiropractors call me up and say, when I use PEMF, it makes the other stuff that I'm doing work much better. And that includes everything from like acupuncture to, surgical procedures to, stem cells and IR and everything just works a lot better if you combine it with PEMF. Like 2 or 3 times.
You know what?
Better.
It's like petting your cells. Oh, good cell. That's it. Go faster. That's good boy. Go. But you're petting all your cells at the same time.
There's a sort of a synergistic effect, and because we don't really understand the primary effects of PEMF, we certainly don't understand the synergistic effects. And this is another thing you don't see in the scientific literature, right? Like almost everybody, when you survey people, almost everybody combines PEMF with supplements, for example. Like 70 or 80% of people do that just naturally. And you never really see research on synergistic effects because the cost of research goes up as like the square of the number of things you're testing. So if you're testing, two things, PEMF plus something else, it's like 4 times as complicated and expensive if you're just testing one thing. So a lot of these like very narrow controlled scientific experiments, they totally miss the boat on synergistic effects and health. Health is a synergistic outcome. I mean, it's like lifestyle, diet, and exercise. Right. If you don't put all those things in the mix, if you do everything right but you don't exercise, or if you do everything right but you have a crappy diet, you know what happens, right? I mean, so you've got to be able to look at multifactorial things, and that's just really missing from most of the scientific literature.
They should push people out in the sun with PEMF units beneath their gurneys and let them and literally heal faster from whatever they're recovering from.
I think so.
I got to mention a guy, and I think you know him, but he's been a friend of mine for a long time, and that's the PEMF unit that I actually use. But you know Paul Becker, right?
No, I do not, actually, believe it or not.
Okay. He's been in the space for a long time. But
He
has like a little hockey puck type of a magnet. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that, and I think that has a more focused transmission, if you will. Like, is that beneficial? If somebody had lower back pain, just put it under their back for a while?
I think that actually it comes down to that. And like when people tell me what they think clinically, like their personal experience with things, I hear basically pretty good stuff about Becker's stuff, you know. And I mean, you know, the need for PEMF is huge. And I just wish people would get over this whole, you know, competitive, you know, try to suck up all the market share nonsense. What really we need to do is get the word out and get people to start using it, because with many of these PEMF units, and you know, you got to kind of pick one that's right for you and your lifestyle and your budget, but with many of them, you see really great benefits. And it's hard to say if one is better than the other. You'd have to do a side-by-side comparison, and we really don't have honest, you know, side-by-side comparisons of the effects of PEMF.
Well, but the thing that I like about micro-pulse.com and then also earthpulsetechnologies.com is you guys aren't profiteering, right? So like you both have units that are in a few hundred dollars where people can get involved and experience the benefits, you know, of this type of device. Then there's this other group that look at PEMF from not like, okay, here's what the technology costs us to build. What's a reasonable markup? They look at it like, what are people willing to pay to rid their bodies of pain? And then, and they're like, oh, we're $13,000. You're like, what? Well, people pay that to rid themselves of pain. I'm like, oh, I get it. So you are basically profiteering on the technology because there's other guys out there honestly doing good business and selling it more like a piece of equipment than a promise for hope.
That's right. That's exactly right. You put that better than I could have, and that's exactly the word I use. And what really ticks me off is these profiteers. They're not just charlatans, because a lot of them, the stuff does actually work. The real problem is that they're profiteers.
Yeah.
And you're right. They'll take a captive audience, people in extreme chronic pain or other, you know, other things that can't be fixed by mainstream medicine. They're captive because they're usually at the very end of the road when it comes to trying things. Means, you know, a lot of them have already had the surgery. They've already had the, you know, cortisone injections and all the other stuff that, you know, you can get covered, and they're just desperate. They want their life back. So they're willing to pay tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, there are people who've told me, you know, they've mortgaged their house to buy a PEMF system because they're in so much pain. There are people who live that way, and I think it's terrible to take advantage of people like that. I mean, it's unconscionable, and yet there are some pretty bad people out there. And so when I talk down about other PEMF systems, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that mentality of profiteering, you know, at the expense of other people. You know, so what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to get across to people is, you know, is the integrity that could be and should be in this marketplace, in this technology, and I'm trying to set the standard. And I think you are.
Cause here's what's going to happen. I can hear it already. I mean, I hear people's brains clicking as they're listening to today's show going that, you know, they bought this PEMF unit or that PEMF unit, and they're going to start writing to these guys and trying to articulate what you said about the waveform. And all you need to do is ask one of these companies for, do you have an oscilloscope view of your waveform? It's really easy. That's all. Hey, you guys have an oscilloscope? Well, of course we have an oscilloscope. Can you print me out
they'll look at the electronic output to the coil and they'll say, look at our square wave. But what they don't do is they don't get a high bandwidth Hall effect sensor to sense the actual magnetic field. And when you do that, and that was one of the big things I brought to NASA, all the NASA guys at NASA were like, well, this is almost a perfect square wave. And I was like, no, it's not. The input to the coils looks about perfect, but when you actually look at the induced magnetic field, it looked more like a camel hump, right? You know, because it was smearing it out.
Right.
So a lot of these guys in these big PEMF, you know, privateering company.
They're looking on. They're looking on the send to side as opposed to the transmit
side. They'll look at the signal. What they'll do is they'll cherry pick and they'll look at whatever looks best and they'll print that out and they'll send it to you. What is really needed, and people ask me to do this all the time, and honest to God, I just don't want to be a policeman. You know, it's just not my thing. But, you know, I've built the instruments where I can actually take these devices and measure what their actual output is. And I'm going to just let you know that most of these companies lie or they're just wrong by a factor of 10 to 100.
Or they don't care. They're happy. As long as they're getting an undulating wave, they're happy. They're getting an undulating wave, yeah.
They're not looking for an undulating wave. They're looking for a payment, okay? Right. As long as you're willing to pay that $47,000 for one of their systems, you know, they don't. You know, many of them don't care. Some of them are pretty good. Like, I think MagnaWave's pretty good at their after-sale customer support. You know, they care about whether or not it works for you. And frankly, if you just are willing to jack up the power, which, as you point out, it comes with jacked-up cost, you can make these things work. So when people pay 30,000, whatever, for one of these systems, you end up with this psychological process of cognitive dissonance. Like, no one wants to believe they just got, you know, hoodwinked for tens of thousands of dollars. So if it works at all, they're going to convince themselves that it was worth money. That's what these profiteers have going for them. They got everything, the psychology, and they have the fact that PMF seems to work. And that's what they need.
It's amazing. I'm telling you. I think it's one of the most exciting technologies that not enough people know about. But you got to be willing to learn. You got to learn. You got to educate yourself in this space before you go out and spend money. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, it's totally true. It's totally true. And when I tell people that, there's a large percentage of people who say, well, you know, I just want an answer. You know, I just want to be able to flip a switch and make 30 years of bad choices go away. You know, and I tell them that's just not how PMF works. You got to be
All they need to do is get with you and say, look, we'll pay you to design the circuit for us. They change the board, and a generation later, they go, hey, the new and improved unit, and they just right the ship. You don't argue about who told us to make a left when we should have made a right. Somebody makes a decision to make a U-turn and go the right way. That's it.
Yeah, that's the thing, and I've put enough information out there because I'm pretty transparent about it. I think I've put enough information on the Internet, enough, you know, papers and scientific statements and stuff that PMF could be built properly by, you know, anybody who takes it seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, interestingly, a lot of the companies are, like, I'm starting to see the impact of what I'm saying on a lot of the conversation of PMF, like that it is waveform and not so much frequency or Gauss. And there are very intelligent people who just don't agree with me. And, you know, hey, I could be wrong. But right now, that's what the data is telling me.
Yeah, and you got it, like you said earlier in the show, you got to go where the data leads you. Okay, look, Dr. Robert Dennis, it's been fascinating. I feel like you and I need to do a few more shows.
Hey, you can call me anytime, right?
Yeah, the website is micro-pulse.com. Show him some love. He brought only information here today. In fact, he told me he didn't want to plug his products at the beginning of the show, which, if anybody knows me, if you tell me you don't want me to pull your hair, I'm going to pull it several times because that's the way I was raised. All right, look, Dr. Dennis, thanks, man. This has been fun.
Hey, man. It was a lot of fun talking to you, Carl. All right, talk to you later.
Okay, and that's it for today's show. Tomorrow is Thursday. We have Renew Life RX tomorrow, I believe. No. No. We actually have William Llewellyn making his debut on Superhuman Radio, and it's been long overdue. He'll be on tomorrow to talk about his new growth hormone test. For those of you who buy growth hormone, even if you're buying it from a pharmacy, you want to make sure that it's really growth hormone. Look, the guy's selling a product, but I asked him to come on the show for the audience. I didn't ask him to pay for an interview or anything like that. I just want the audience to know what he has to say. Because there's a lot of people spending money on growth hormone right now that are buying bunk, even from their pharmacies. So here's a way to find out for yourself in your own home. And then we're also going to talk about some reasonably safe and effective anabolic steroid cycles. So that's tomorrow. And then, of course, Friday is Come At Me, Bro. Don't miss that. I'm answering your questions. Go to my Facebook page and post your questions if you have any for me, or PM me or email me at onair@superhumanradio.net. Okay, that's it.